Hey, Dylan Kelly here, host of the Wave Break podcast. Excited to get into this episode, but first, here's a quick word from our sponsor. This episode of the Wave Break podcast is brought to you by Klaviyo, the growth marketing platform most recommended by other business leaders. Listen, in uncertain times, you need to be supporting your community and growing relationships with your customers. It's going to be appreciated. It's going to be remembered. It's going to be shared. And in good times and bad, this type of communication that's open and empathetic with your customers is key. This is a key theme that we've been talking about at Wavebreak. I've been preaching this on the podcast. And when you're communicating with your customers in this way, the best way to do this is with email. It is and always will be one of the best channels for delivering communication like this. And what I love about Klaviyo is that email is one of its core offerings. And their personalization that you can do inside Klaviyo is just, it can't be beat. And when you leverage that personalization driven by a 360 degree view of the customer, these emails are going to feel more relevant and they're going to drive even stronger relationships. And Klaviyo gets it. They're not just, you know, some company. They understand how challenging it is right now for every entrepreneur. You know, it was hard to get your business off the ground, and navigating these times is even harder. And if you're feeling overwhelmed with growing your business, know that you're not alone. Klaviyo is here to help you build relationships across any distance for your brand and create memorable and meaningful email marketing moments that last a lifetime. And that's how you build a successful e-commerce brand. And this is why I love Klaviyo so much, because they're on the same page with me and Wavebreak. Is like, we're not just about making more revenue. That's great. But what this is really about is an opportunity to create an amazing community with your customers. And the best way to do it is with email. And if you're not on Klaviyo, you gotta get on Klaviyo. Visit klaviyo.com to schedule a free trial. That's Klaviyo.com. You're listening to the Wavebreak podcast, the show where I interview the people behind the fastest growing e-commerce and direct-to-consumer brands. I'm your host, Dylan Kelly, founder and CEO at Wavebreak. Wavebreak is the email and CRM agency for high-growth D2C brands. With ad costs rising, we help brands maximize lifetime value by building and optimizing world-class email and SMS marketing programs. You can learn more about partnering with us at wavebreak.com. Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Wavebreak podcast. Really excited for today's episode. I'm joined by Vasa Martinez, founder of Growth Buster, CMO at Outer Isle, which is a keto-friendly, low-carb bread brand. You can learn more about them at outerislegourmet.com. What he does is he's run a lot of creative through, he specializes in performance creative across paid and organic social. So we talk about some actionable things you can do to drive more ad performance by focusing on two things, creative as well as community. More on exactly how to do that and how you can drive more performance even in a post iOS 14 world in today's episode, along with what he's learned as being CMO of Outer Isle. So without further ado, let's dive right in. Thanks so much for coming on the show, Vasa.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
Yeah, I'm excited to chop it up. So before we dive in, kind of give us an overview. Like, what's Growth Buster? You're CMO of another company. Kind of give us like the overview of all the projects you're involved in, just so people have context of before we dive into like more specifics.
For sure. Yeah, so I started with Growth Buster over 4 years ago. We really focus on three main buckets: community, creative, and innovation. So everything from social management to influencer management, community management on the community side. On the creative side, we focus on performance creative. So videos, stills, anything that's going to be run as an ad on paid social, and organic creative. So a lot of cool organic social executions that you might see on online, like, you know, we work with Magic Spoon, Outer Isle, Eighth Wonder, several others. We really focus on not just what they're posting, but why they're posting it. Each kind of post has its own creative brief. With creative, we also do a lot of other things like trade marketing material, sales sheets, in-store disruption type things. But we don't always book those as evergreen deliverables. And then on the innovation side, innovation's kind of like an open book for what's on the horizon. What should we be looking at? And last year, you know, when the pandemic hit, that thing was SMS. Now it's a real, real big thing that everyone's working on. So for us, it's the acquisition of email and phone numbers. And then how do we communicate with customers after we acquire that email or phone number?
Nice. That's awesome. Yeah. I would love to start on the paid and organic social side, because I think you're doing some really interesting things there. And one thing I've noticed too, is like, even recently I was going through Instagram, I saw two brands. I was like, oh, I kind of want to figure out which one is doing more revenue. Check the Alexa. They're both the same. Didn't feel like buying and then buying again in a month to do the math. But then I was like, oh, I'm going to check their Instagram engagement just to kind of see, because they're very social brands. But it's just interesting how, like, you know, so many brands nowadays, they're just organic has really fallen off for so many brands. And I think your approach to it's really smart. Can you talk about like how you are approaching organic social?
Yeah. I'll start with how I think about it, like from just a very general, broad level. I think the best way to look at social is not to post pictures. And it's definitely not coming into work or waking up one day and saying, what are we posting? There are instances of like that. For instance, if, you know, a lot of the meme accounts or meme style branded CPG companies that are doing mostly memes, they're pretty on like they have their finger on the trigger at all times. Like with the Met Gala, you know, people were pretty on point with memeing those out that night and then the next day. What I like to do is look at the next 30 to 60, 90 days out, and our team plans together what we call our editorial calendar for organic social, and looking at the whys behind why should this be posted. And we have things that are called hard dates. Those are like holidays that are very endemic to a brand that they want to be a part of. For instance, you know, it sometimes gets a little boring, but like an outer aisle, if it's National Sandwich Day or National Pizza Day, we have to be a part of that conversation because we create a product that solves one of those problems, being that it's low carb, grain free and gluten free. So looking at everything with a solid line of sight is important for us. We never want to just post something random that day. I don't think it ever turns out to be, when you like zoom out a bit and look at the grid as a whole, it never turns out to be too cohesive. So we want to plan ahead, get things scheduled ahead of time, so we know what the grid's going to look like. We know the whys behind everything. And then more specifically, the editorial calendar, you know, that's probably our bread and butter. One of the most valuable things we have at GB. Every time somebody sees it, they're like, oh, can you send me that doc? And no, you can't send me that. But it's, you know, what product are we talking about? What's the relevance of this post? Is it an evergreen post, meaning it has no tie to a certain date? It could be posted in 2 years from now. You know, it's not like a limited edition flavor. We get into art direction and who's shooting it, whether it's a, you know, we have several photographers, a videographer and editor, who's going to be the creator of it. Is it going to graphic design? And it breaks down exactly what they need to be considering in their execution as they're, you know, producing.
Yeah, that's awesome. And then when you're thinking about that, like, is there, like, especially nowadays, just because it's kind of changed the game, like with the way the feed works, it's not the same how it used to be. You used to post it, everybody sees it. Like, have you found, like, do you take the more quality over quantity approach, or do you take the more like, oh, we're going to like ramp volume, or how does volume play into that when you're creating that 30, 60, 90 day editorial calendar?
So volume for us is, we've got like a 15 day, we produce with a 15 day production calendar. So we're planning the first half of the month and shooting the second half of the month. And when it comes to volume, like I think 15 to 20 posts is solid. There's others that post 40 times, you know, a month as a CPG company. For me, I just don't think a lot of food and beverage companies have that much to say to post that much, that frequently. That's just a personal preference. I like that 15 to 20 mark. When it comes to evaluating, though, I think the tide has shifted. And I talked a lot about this with you know, past clients and whoever the social media managers are. A lot of folks are looking at likes and comments divided by followers. And for me, that's very, very flawed. As you mentioned, brands, organic social, have fallen off. But to me, I don't know if that's actually true. I think you have to look at it differently now. In the past, when you were looking at the timelines and they were chronological, it was, you know, people were kicking out 2014. It was easy to grow social, organic social. These days, what we look at in terms of engagement is, instead of the likes and comments divided by followers, we look at the likes and comments, shares and saves divided by reach. And that's where we know if it's truly, you know, fallen off. We look at a certain percentage that we want to be at, 2 to 4%. And if it's under that, then we look at the why. You know, why did this not perform? Is this not what they want to see? And then oftentimes, if we have that feeling, we're not averse to literally asking on stories with one of the stickers, like, what do you want to see on social? Do you want to see more educational stuff? And the ultimate goal for us is to balance education and entertainment. And it's different for every brand. So you always have to ask and be just conversational with them, whether it's email, you know, a jot form or a type form or Survey Monkey, whatever it's going to be. It's just extracting information, providing value, and then things will shake out as they should.
Yeah, that's a great point. Like, because you do see like comments, there's a lot less comments, but it doesn't mean less people are seeing the content. And like all that content over time, you know, you're still solidifying and really building that brand. What are some of the most, like when you think about content outside of memes or like the different types of posts that you guys post, like what type of content has been most effective recently?
So again, I think that effective can be defined in a couple different ways. Like for some people,
how do you measure that? Are you looking at like you said, like taking that equation and dividing it? Are you tracking it back to revenue or what does that look like?
Our engagement, the way that we calculate engagement is likes, comments, saves, and shares. And most importantly for us, the saves and shares. We want to know if it was saved 117 times, you'll find that your reach is way higher than normal. If it was shared 117 times, you'll find that your reach is way higher than normal. If it was liked 1,000 times and you know shared only 5 or 10, you'll see that the reach, in my opinion, from what I've seen, is really dependent on, is it savable? Is it shareable? If it's yes, you're doing well. If it's not, well, you got to figure out why. And it's always, you know, in social, you're never set for a couple of years. It's not like it's finance and we have a spreadsheet that could work for decades. It's always changing. So you just have to be, you know, have your finger on the pulse.
Got it. Yeah. And so when it comes to that, like what type of content is most shareable? Like, is it like, it's probably not product photos, or is it in a certain way, or what does that look like? What makes something share more?
Yeah. I look at content pillars as a whole and not just one. I know that some content pillars are going to be base hits. I know that some are going to be home runs. Right now in food and beverage, UGC, you know, up close, delicious looking photos, those are going to be home runs. We know that, but you can't do that every single post. There's some brands out there that have done that for years and they're stoked that their engagement's kind of keeping up. But I think that there's a lot more to it than just one content pillar like that. There are some posts that need to be base hits. And the way that I define effective for the base hits is for a strictly, you know, for a post that might look great, but also the why behind it is education. For instance, a brand's reason for being is we'll go to the outer aisle again. It's low carb, grain free, gluten free. We have to often repeat that and be broken records with that on certain posts. Right. And the way that I gauge the effectiveness of that type of content or that educational one is when you look at paid social and you see in the comments, and before you can even community manage, you're seeing people respond for you. Like, is this keto friendly? And somebody will come in before your community manager can get in there. Yeah, it's totally keto friendly. You can find it at Sprouts. And that's when we know that education is really being learned across the community.
Oh, that's smart. So you're using social to really like solidify and continue to build the brand, to build those people. So as those ads get in the feed, yeah. And I want to talk about community management because I know that's something you're big on too. And maybe this is actually the perfect transition. So like that's something you're big on, community management as really like a marketing function. What are your thoughts on community management and how that fits into the picture with all this?
So I've got an article on our website and it's community management. Is it customer support or is it performance marketing? And I have a hot take that it's performance marketing. There are certain times where you ladder up to customer support. If somebody got a foreign object in their product, if the product came damaged, those sorts of things, that's customer support, customer experience. Community management to me is a tentacle of performance because you'll find some really great brands out there. And if you go to their ad library, nothing is being responded to. And for me, that's a bunch of shots that haven't been taken. If somebody says, hey, where can I buy this? We're in community management saying, well, what's your zip code? And then we'll find them the cross streets, literally to the closest place they can find it. So we're always pushing towards a conversion, whether it's online or offline. Other questions on there, you know, you can do the math. There's tons of different questions people are asking about products when they see ads, especially if it's a prospecting ad for people don't really know about your product. There's a lot of education that can happen in there. So it's something that we invest in heavily at GB. Most people don't really know how important it is. And when you try to explain it, they probably don't quite understand. But for us, it's a backbone. People always say we're building community and they're following zero people. I don't know that that's true, that they really are. We like to comment on people's IG stories like, hey, you got married, congratulations, or something bad happened, we'll send them flowers. We really want to be a human as like a brand, like we want the brand to feel like humans to the community. That's when they know like we really give a shit. And so that's how we roll.
Yeah. And people love that. And I like the, well, like even like, we'll both like scroll through, you know, you probably experienced this, like you're scrolling through Facebook or Instagram, you go to the comments and there's just like 100 people ripping on the brand. And there's like 1,000 likes on the top comment. They're like, this is garbage. Don't buy it. And it's like a top company where they don't even manage their own. Like, I mean, it just looks terrible. I mean, that's not even, we're not even talking about that level of it. Some brands are literally that bad where they just don't even like, do they even look at the comments? I guess not. But how have you seen your approach translate? Like, because right now paid social is in a really interesting spot. It's getting more expensive, but it's not just getting more expensive, but it's getting more difficult because of all the changes. Like, what do you notice? Like when you take that community driven approach to paid social as well, like how has that played out for the brands that you guys are working with?
Invaluable. I couldn't put a price on how important it is to actually be there and be cognizant. Like a lot of brands will say, oh, we'll just bring on, you know, an intern to handle this, but anybody can respond to a post, but responding to each single comment with intent, like what is the solve here? That's what a lot of operators don't understand that come from, you know, bigger CPG, is there's a reason why we're investing so much time here. It can literally get somebody from being a detractor to an evangelist. And we've seen that so many times. And it stems back from when, you know, a lot of people on the Growthbuster team we come from Quest Nutrition. And Quest Nutrition was all about community. Before social was really social, they built their brand on Facebook. I think they were around before even Instagram came out. And then when Instagram came out, that was an even greater evolution to the brand. But it was all about treating a customer with the utmost amount of respect, no matter how, you know, angry or whatever it may be, just get to the solution, make a friend.
Yeah. And what I think a lot of people don't realize is like, whenever you're commenting on that, like if one person comments, it's another 100 people have the same question or objection. And if you don't respond, it's just there. And then I'm like, oh, like even with the ads I was talking about earlier, I see those. I'm like, oh, I guess it's crap. I'm not going to buy it. But if they responded, or better yet, like one of those people who you ended up turning into an evangelist responded, now all the 1,000 people, they have that same question. You don't have to delete the bad question, but if you have a good response, or better yet, you have a customer respond and tackle it, like, holy cow, like that's the best social proof right in the feed.
100%.
Yeah, that's awesome. And so when you guys are responding and like going for the solve, like what does that kind of look like on a more tactical level? Because I think most people will be like I see this all the time too. They're like, hey, email support, thanks. Email support, thanks.
Yeah, that's literally in my article. That's one way. The people that say email support, they're probably managing tickets. And I'm sorry if you can hear some background noise. I closed my window, I think.
Oh, no worries. I don't hear anything.
Okay, awesome. So the people that are sending people to support, saying, you know, support at whatever, they're probably running data on how many tickets they have regarding certain questions. And that's a data-driven approach that I can understand. But if you put yourself in those shoes, nobody likes waiting on hold when they call, you know, a customer support hotline for 20 minutes. The music might get annoying or whatever it might be. And that's the exact equivalent of what people are doing when they drive straight to customer support. I think that there's times where you ladder up. If something serious happened, hey, email us at support@ and we'll take care of you. But most of the time, I think that the problem can be solved in the comments for the exact reason you mentioned. If it's an ad, it's going to continue running and people will see the answers and they'll know that we're very responsive, and that'll build the trust that we need to build.
And now a quick break for a quick word from our sponsor, Okendo. Okendo is the new standard in customer reviews for high growth Shopify brands. We use them with our clients, and they work with over 4,000 of the fastest growing Shopify retailers like Skims, Nomad, and Buck Mason to help them leverage their most powerful asset, their customers. Okendo gives brands all the tools they need to capture and showcase customer generated content like product reviews and ratings, photos and videos, and Q&A. Plus, they have an awesome integration with Klaviyo that makes it easy to do cool stuff like send review request emails and target shoppers based on review content. And now that it's that time of year again, when Black Friday and Cyber Monday are top of mind, Okendo is offering a 90-day free trial to help e-commerce brands ramp holiday conversion without having to worry about increased subscription costs. If you sign up before October 31st, you pay nothing until 2022. It's really a no-brainer to me, and don't worry, you won't be forced into any expensive annual contracts after your trial is up. They offer super affordable monthly subscriptions starting at $29. So you can make the most out of this holiday season with a little help from Okendo. Visit okendo.io and start your free trial today. That's okendo.io. Thanks, Okendo, for sponsoring the show. Right. And then you end up turning that like ad into almost a landing page in the feed, with, because you only get so much content in there, and it's great and it looks so organic. That's awesome. Speaking of paid social, like, It's been a really interesting year. How have things played out? But what's interesting about you and the way you think about it is you have this different strategy that's so different than just kind of like the run it up of like most people who, like I said, aren't even responding to comments. Like, how has this year played out for you over, you know, compared to previous years? And like, what's the current state of paid social for you guys?
So we don't run any paid social. We work with a lot of different paid social teams across different channels.
Got it. So you're more focused on the performance creative of paid social.
Correct. Teams. Correct.
Got
we,
it.
We don't have any media buyers, although it might be nice. We used to in the early days, and then I moved away and doubled down on creative. It was great advice from a friend. The way I view it, although we're not running paid ads for direct response marketing, meaning we want to drive a conversion, we run paid ads for some retail support. That's about it. But when it comes to looking at things as a whole, Outer Isle is a perfect example. We have a few different agencies touching different channels. We've got a paid search agency, paid social for Facebook IG, and then we've got a TikTok agency running ads. And the way I view them is it's important to understand the customer acquisition cost per channel, but it's also good to zoom out and see what it looks like blended. And what I do when it comes to blended is, well, let's put all of our tools in one basket and then gauge it. You know, paid search might not be doing the best. It might be, you know, it might be doing great on branded, but not the best on unbranded. Facebook might be, you know, declining because of whatever happened a few months ago that nobody likes and nobody solved either. And then TikTok might be firing it up pretty good, but it has its own limitations. I think the last attribution is add to cart. So you have to do some extrapolation there with some post-purchase surveys. But all in all, I look at, it's called MAPS, marketing as a percent of sales. How much are you spending and what's your percentage threshold of that being okay? Is it 20%? Is it 25%? Are you a mattress company and you're good at 30%? Whatever that may be. And then you look at it, you zoom out, and when you find that number, what it is, are you okay with it? Is it profitable when you look at the P&L? And that's how I view things as a whole. I think affiliate helps out, referral helps out. A lot of different channels that aren't necessarily ad spend can help bring down your blended customer acquisition costs. And that's where I find the most value in looking at it.
Yeah, and that makes total sense. I know a lot of people looking at blended CAC for just like to actually understand nowadays, since it is all, it's getting a lot more difficult to really see. And then with that, like coming on the performance creative side, if you guys don't run the ads, like are you supplying, like for example, for Outer Isle, are you guys creating all the creative for those ads?
Yeah. Yeah. We create all the creative for the ads. We're testing a bunch of different things at once, different, what is it called, different templates that we use, things that we have, like it's almost like a football playbook. We call them a bunch of different random names and say, let's give this the T frame, hit it with a headline up top, left side gets, you know, XYZ, right side gets XYZ. We run a lot of different styles of ads to see what works best. Sometimes things work great across several brands. Sometimes things only work for one brand, but it's all about testing. And we really lean on the performance team that the brand partners with as well to give us a little bit of data on, you know, is what color is working better than the other? What product is working better than the other? Should we test different reviews? Do people like customer reviews better than PR reviews? Those sorts of things. And when it comes to that, we're able to really punch in and get what people need.
No, yeah, that's huge. Like, what have you seen over the last, you know, 24 months? I feel like everything has changed so much. What do you see in terms of the importance of creative now? Like, are you testing more creative to stay on top of things? Or since you were so dialed before, like, how is creative playing into your success now?
Yeah, so we're finding that stills are working a lot better these days. Surprisingly. Yeah, we're finding stills. So we're repurposing some UGC stills, getting approval from the people who posted them. And we're finding that that's crushing right now. A bit different than the past few years when video really was the gold standard. You still need a dynamic variety of assets to run, but stills right now are something that's helping out. Some videos are performing a little bit weaker than others historically, but it's all about just really testing new things, you know.
Right. And one of the things I know you're a big believer in is the concept of like briefs. I think so many brands like try to move so fast and like, hey, we just need to add and we need it to look awesome. And like, go do it. And there's like a lot of lack of direction from the actual brand itself, or, you know, working with all these different agencies, it's easy for things to really fall through the cracks and it not end up how that person at the brand envisions it. So tell me about your thoughts on briefs and how those can help the entire creative process.
Yeah. So we get that a lot. Let's make this look dope. And we can make anything look pretty cool, but is that going to translate? So I think a good way to look at it is, depending on the relationship with the client, there needs to be a brief. The client may not have somebody that can fill out a brief as you need. For example, if you said, what dimensions do we need? The person might not know if you want it in portrait, story, or feed. So there's some education that needs to happen there. But for the most part, if people can handle what is the objective of this ad, what is the target of this ad, what is the insight for this ad, and those are three major parts. Then you can get into positioning. What is the positioning of the product? How do we speak very, directly to the person that we're targeting? And then measurement and evaluation. I think that those are six components of a brief that people really don't handle or hit very well. And you find that ads are running for a bunch of different groups that may not necessarily be the position you want for that group. Example, if I was having a team run ads for a grain-free audience or celiac gluten-free audience, and we're talking so much about how low carb or keto friendly the bread is, it might not resonate with that target as much. So it's very important to understand that in a brief: objective, target, insight, positioning, measurement, evaluation. And that measurement and evaluation is a very important part, because if somebody's not clear as to what success looks like going into an ad, so let's say the person that says make a dope ad, if literally measurement and evaluation of that ad is a subjective, this is dope, it's probably not going to be a very smooth process. It's going to probably waste a lot of time and resources, especially if it's a more expensive production. If it's something that's, just an edit to a current video, it might not be as expensive, but it's very important to understand that first and foremost. Do they want this ad to be the most converting ad ever? There's got to be a lot of communication and collaboration between the brand and the agency, in my opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's where a lot of brands are now feeling the pinch, is they kind of like let go of their agencies a little bit when things were really good, because it was like, dollar in, a couple dollars out. Now it's getting really hard. Plus, there's a lot more competition. I love the point you made on positioning, which I think that is like, well, so many brands, like, I know you said this in our pre-show notes, but like they copy exact messaging from other companies, or worse, I see so many brands who don't even know actually what they stand for. Like they just have nothing. And they're just like, well, we're X product. I'm like, cool. Well, what's different? And they're like, well, we're the best. And it's like, but no, what are your thoughts on positioning?
So my thoughts on positioning are that every product or brand has one, and it's really important on identifying what it is. And because for me, positioning is, again, it goes back to the target. Who is your product for? And what's the point of difference? And then when you get into the point of difference, you need an RTB or a reason to believe to justify that point of difference. For example, like Nike, or let's go with Adderall. Adderall's target is, and you need a frame of reference as well, meaning where are you competing? So with every ad and with every positioning, you need to have, let's say Adderall is the plant-based bread for health-conscious millennials. And then a point of difference might be that's low-carb, grain-free, and gluten-free. And the RTB is because it's made with 63% fresh vegetables. So if a brand can really identify its positioning in a very solid way, it makes it a lot easier for the creative agency to bring that to life with the creative, with the copy.
Yeah, absolutely. I know so many brands have no positioning. I was just started with a product and then they literally have nothing, but you're right. Like, and that's really how you solidify and build a strong brand, because then not only does it like translate to your creative, what you're actually about, but then your product pages make more sense. Your site converts higher. Your community managers know what to say and how to respond and what message to push. And it just creates the ripple effect throughout the entire business. And then kind of like you said, like you kind of have to beat a dead horse over and over again with the different social posts to really hammer in what the company's about. And I think that's something that we get so caught up on, especially when you're a marketer or like entrepreneurial at all. It's like, you have so many ideas. You're like, oh, I could do this and I could do that. And you keep trying to resell yourself on the idea with some more advanced concept, when really all you have to do is say the same thing over and over again. Cause I think we forget that like most people aren't obsessing with our brand as much as we are. And it is really important to kind of like not dumb it down, but like you said, like figure out what you stand for and then stick to it and then just put it everywhere.
Yeah. Sometimes you've got to be a broken record. And what you didn't ask this, but one thing I'll throw out there is a common pitfall with brands and their positioning is the first ever, or finally a blank that does blank. And being the first ever to something doesn't necessarily make somebody trust you as a brand more. I think the saying is people don't care what you do. They care why you do it. They don't care what you do for yourself. They care what you do for them. And that's one thing that I see people leading with in prospecting ads is finally, you know, the first blanket that massages your back when you're sleeping. Well, that's actually better than, you know, finally the first blanket that's a self-massager. I don't know. Like, it has to be about the customer. And that's a common pitfall in positioning, you know, creative and products and ads.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, what are some of your favorite brands positioned in the marketplace right now? Or like, is there any that you look to? I mean, it could even be like as big as Nike, but any that you look to for inspiration of like brands who get positioning right?
I know brands who get the ads right. I think that Apple does a fantastic job. Mm. You know, there's that old ad. It's the first ever MP4 player that you can fit in your pocket, something like that. And then that was like the wrong way of doing it. And the right way was, you know, 1 million songs in your pocket. That's what it does for the customer. I think it's very, very clear. When it comes to positioning on websites, I think that oftentimes it's a lot easier to be clear. It's a lot better to be clear than creative. So on some websites, if you look at the header or the masthead, whichever way you like to call it, it's not quite clear what people are selling. So when you land there, you know, it takes some time and some education to figure out what the heck is going on here. So there's some brands that do well and some brands that don't do it so well. I won't name any names, but I think that, you know, if people follow the simple rules of the creative brief, you know, positioning and insights are very important. I'll give a historic example that was probably one of my favorites, and it's not even a brand, it's like an industry. But the milk industry, the Got Milk campaign that they ran in the late 90s, they surveyed 100 or 1,000 milk lovers, and they had them go without milk for a week. And the marketing insight that they got from that was after that week was over, they asked them, well, what did you experience? And the majority of people said, not having milk undermines certain foods. You know, eating a chocolate cake or eating Oreos is significantly undermined if you cannot have milk. It doesn't, if you drink a Coca-Cola with it or whatever, cranberry juice, it's not good. It's not going to be something like cereal. You got to have milk. So not having milk undermines certain foods. And that was a marketing insight. And that's why they had the Got Milk campaign at the dude trying to answer on the radio station saying Simon Burr or whatever it was. He wasn't able to get that point across and win because he didn't have milk to clear out his throat.
Yeah, no, that's a great one. And I think we've actually like really fallen away from like really good copywriting and just like advertising in general, maybe because it got so easy with targeting, you had to be less creative. But like, I literally go back and look at some of those old ads for really anything. And the headlines are so good. And it's like, wait, what is the answer to that? Even like almost 100 years later, in some cases, like some of the first ads were so good. And it's so right. It's like people trying to get fancy with it in the wrong way and kind of say, like you're saying, like, oh, it's the best this. And it's like, no, like that's not really how it is. But it's like you said, like thinking with the customer in mind first and being more benefit driven instead of feature driven, which so many people say, but I don't think enough people are saying it kind of in the D2C or CPG world. Like in software, people have been saying it for a really long time, but I feel like not enough people are saying that or doing that in the space, which is a huge opportunity for brands who aren't.
Yeah, I think copywriting, I'm not the best. I mean, I could probably hang, but I do know that when you look at historical advertising, there was a Porsche ad that said the fastest you can go without being 40,000 feet in the air. And then a recent one is, you know, built by fuel, or it was something just so general that didn't quite hit home as much. I think that there's, and I feel bad if anyone's listening, I doubt it, but you know, if you're on that agency, I really miss the old school style of advertising that was so creative, but also so clear.
Right.
It just, yeah.
Yeah, no, I agree. It might not even be the agency's fault. Like it could be like brand side too. Like that happens a lot. Like the brand, like brands are like, so like, you know, they want to do their thing. And then the agency comes up with some amazing idea and they're like, no, like we just, it should be like the CMO's like, I'm paying you guys so much money. They're like, it should be like the best fuel. I don't know, something. Yeah. But yeah, no, you're totally right. Like Porsche has so many good ads from back in the day. They're like, did you really dream of owning a minivan when you were a kid? And then it's just like the all new 911. It's like, oh, yeah. It's so good. So simple. It's like two lines. I probably butchered the actual one, but Yeah, there's some really good ones. No, you're totally right. And we're starting to wrap up here and run out of time. But like, as you think about just like the rest of trends, we're heading into Q4. It's going to be pretty busy, pretty hectic. Like, how are you just thinking to prepare for that? Like more of the same, like really, I feel like you're ahead of the curve compared to a lot of people when it comes to performance creative and all those things. But like, how are you preparing for the upcoming holiday season?
Simple and clear. I think a lot of people get caught up in devising this incredible, crazy Black Friday, Cyber Monday plan. But for me, it's always simple and clear.
I love that.
It's like we have nothing fancy built. We have very functional, fundamental tactical plans for the brands that we work with. One of our brands is launching a new product right before or right after, still waiting on the final date. So that might be a little bit fun. But otherwise, just simple, clear, and effective. We're not trying to recreate the wheel here. We know it's going to be competitive. Last year, we tested launching a bit sooner. I did all right. Just keep it simple, clear. Keep it simple, stupid. That's what the saying is, right?
Yeah, I think that's so missing. That's what I've been telling everybody. I've been telling my own team that. Like, we get so caught up because it's like I was saying earlier, even with the messaging, it's like you want to keep making it better and better and better and better and better. And then it just keeps getting more and more complex. And at the end of the day, we're all still humans who can still like, I love the concept of like folding a piece of paper. Like it can be when you fold a piece of paper as many times as you can, it stretches from Earth to the moon, but like the brain can't even comprehend it. So why do we think we can execute these super advanced marketing strategies when we can't even comprehend like how many times the paper can be folded and how far that stacks like a piece of printer paper? It's crazy. Yeah. The brain doesn't even make sense. And so many people try to do that and they overcomplicate it. And then they wonder why they fall short or everything falls apart or they're so stressed when really like, yeah, like going back to the old copy, like we were talking about, like simple, but effective, and then you just do it really well. You're going to get way more results than the other people. Even the fastest growing brands, they don't have a million SKUs. They have a few SKUs and they just keep doing more and more of what works instead of trying to like overcomplicate everything. I love that message. I'm really glad you brought that up to end on. That's great.
You got it, man.
Awesome. Well, hey, Vasa, thanks so much for coming on the show today. Where can we go to learn more about you, the performance creative that you guys do, and Outer Isle and everything you're involved with?
Yes. Yeah, so you can find me, Vasa Martinez, on LinkedIn. You can find our website for GrowthBuster at growthbuster.com. No S, it's GROWTHBUSTER.com. Outer Isle is outerislegourmet.com. It's one of our top clients that we've won 2 years in a row on the Inc. 500, fastest growing companies. And then another project I'm working on is Perfy. It's a adaptogenic and nootropic soda that's launching at the end of this year. You can find us at drinkperfy.com, P-E-R-F-Y.
Amazing. Awesome. Well, thanks so much for coming on the show, Vasa. We'll link that all up down in the show notes below. It was great to chop it up with you on this like really simple, but extremely effective and no-brainer strategies. I think everyone who listens to this is going to be like, wow, like I was overcomplicating a lot. So I really appreciate you taking the time and thanks for coming on.
You got it, man. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Wavebreak Podcast. If you're not subscribed on iTunes or Spotify, go hit that subscribe button so you don't miss out on future episodes. And if you're not on our email list, go sign up at wavebreak.co/join. You'll join other e-commerce leaders at brands like Skims, Cartier, and Walmart, and thousands more, learning exactly what's working in e-commerce right now. You won't want to miss it. Sign up at wavebreak.co/join. It's free. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Wavebreak Podcast. I hope you have a wonderful day.